Hello and welcome back to the Nowhere Office, wherever you are, with me, Julia Hobsbawm.
And me, Stefan Stern.
This is the podcast which looks at the world of work as it is, as it could be, should be, might be, with some of the leading thinkers and doers of the day.
Well, hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Nowhere Office. This is Stefan Stern in London, and I am on my own in London because my presenter buddy Julia Hobsbawm is in New York City right now, as you'll hear in a moment, having too much fun by the sound of it, but taking the Nowhere Office to the Big Apple, where there is lots to report on, as you'll hear. We'll start off straight away. She's going to sit down with Helen Brocklebank, who is the chief executive of Walpole, and that's the trade body for all the British luxury goods, luxury brands, I think over 250 of them, which she represents. And they caught up with each other just now in New York.
Welcome to New York, to yet another pop-up Nowhere Office. And I'm with Helen Brocklebank, who is the CEO of Walpole, the luxury goods trade body for the UK, someone I've known for a very, very long time. And Helen and I are coinciding in this Nowhere Office that is New York. Helen, hello.
Hi, Julie. Thank you so much for having me. I can't think of anything nicer than to be in New York with you. What a lovely thing to happen in Inchicone, doing the Nowhere Office.
Hanging out, we've just had breakfast together. Now, you are working this city for British luxury brands. What's going on?
Well, my role as the chief executive of Walpole is to be cheerleader in chief for more than 250 amazing British brands. I mean, names that you would know anywhere in the world, like Rolls Royce or Harrods or Burberry or Mulberry. Those kind of things.
And Chapel Down sparkling wine, which I tasted at the British consulate with you the other night.
So great. Or the Macallan. I mean, what a stellar brand that is. And we're here in the US is the single biggest market for luxury goods worldwide. And it is the single biggest market for British luxury goods. The appetite here for Britain, whether it's coming to the UK to holiday or to go on business or stay in the amazing hotels, experience the stuff, or to buy, Burberry trench coat or a Mulberry handbag, the appetite here is extraordinary. And we're here just doing a kind of trade mission thing.
We've relocated to a velvet velour posh room, haven't we?
Chic little enclave hidden away in the back of the hotel.
Because people were having a very noisy working breakfast.
They were having a noisy working breakfast. It was gorgeous, but there was so much buzz in that room, we were never going to hear ourselves think.
And I tell you what's ironic is that while we were getting ready to move, guess what they were talking about? They were talking about work and they were talking about skills.
Were they?
They were. So how is the whole world of luxury goods production, marketing, sales working 3 years on from the pandemic? I mean, is that crossing your radar at all? The stuff that the Nowhere Office is really obsessed by, which is how we're working.
I don't think a day goes by when I don't have a conversation with one of the luxury CEOs at Walpole about hybrid working, about new working practices, about flexibility, about how do you manage a multi-skilled workforce? Because every luxury goods company in the UK has, luxury hospitality company has an HQ workforce, but also they might have people who are totally frontline customer facing, like retail or in restaurants or in hotels or manufacturing. So I think partly the conversation is how do I manage that, the idea of flexibility throughout my workforce? Lots of conversations about shortage of skills and shortage of people. So who's working, how they're working, where they're working, it's a constant conversation.
Just for the avoidance of doubt for the listeners, what is Walpole?
So Walpole is the sector body for British luxury, which is a sector worth £48 billion to the UK economy. So that's bigger than automotive and fashion put together, bigger than the Premier League. It exports 80% of what it produces. And I always say that it doesn't just export goods, it exports values. So everywhere around the world, when you hear a brand like Rolls-Royce or Burberry or Harrods or Glenfiddich or the Macallan, any of, you know, any of the brands that go to make up British luxury, you're hearing something really great about Britain. It's a kind of global calling card for the country.
And yet in an odd sort of way, you're ambassadors and also representatives of, you're lobbyists for, you're sort of like a luxury trade union.
Yeah, we are. I mean, I suppose the closest analogy is the CBI, in that we're a business association with a very broad range of brands in the membership. But unlike the CBI, every one of the 250 members of Walpole has the same customer. So a kind of high-end, affluent customer for whom things like quality and sustainability and kind of experience are really big motivators.
I remember you very kindly invited me when my book came out to a dinner with your members.
Oh, so nice.
And one of your guests gave me food for thought ever since, which was they said that in their luxury, it was actually the head of Fortnum & Mason's, Tom Atheron, and he said that within that luxury brand, there were people at the back office, the marketing, the sales, who could be hybrid and flexible, but the shop floor couldn't. Yeah. And that epitomised what I call the hybrid haves and hybrid have-nots, and that has become a very dominant issue for every workplace, hasn't it?
Yes, and I do, and I think it is it's a constant conversation in the kinds of brands that we look after at Walpole, because you've also got a big manufacturing workforce too, and I think that's a challenge for every CEO. I mean, certainly that's what I observe, because how do you balance that, those kind of haves and have-nots, without creating a kind of, without hardwiring inequality into your workforce?
That's right, without deepening existing inequality in a different direction.
Yeah. You know, you create, I think there was something that was amazing in your book, was it Vince Cable that said it, about a kind of aristocracy of those that can work flexibly?
Yes, yes.
And
the former trade secretary, yeah, to the UK, Vince Cable, yeah.
So, and I do think everybody's very mindful of that, but I think culturally we need to be really, really mindful of that. It's very easy to talk about how important it is to work flexibly.
I mean,
you need to work, how is that going to work with your people who, you know, the housekeepers in your hotel.
What interests me is that you're here representing internationally, globally, in one of the biggest markets in the world, the biggest market for Britain, the USA, values as well as product. And I'm wondering, with the Nowhere office, whether a new set of values around work is emerging. That is all, because I certainly find here in America, and I find it every time I come to America, there is the liveliest discussion about the future of work. You've got the Labour Secretary, Marty Walsh, talking about the skills and the education pathway to work. I mean, it's fascinating and rich discussion. And I just wonder whether it would be good to see more of an alliance between what we're doing in the UK around the future of work with what's happening globally. Maybe that's just a fantasy that the Nowhere office is going to become an export brand for
yeah,
how we think about work.
Well, I think that's really interesting, because I do think a lot of ideas start in the UK. And I also, one of the things I observe in the luxury sector in the UK is there is a consciousness of having a leadership position. I mean, we see that really with the sustainability stuff that we do. If you're a luxury brand, you're saying you are the best. And that means that you have to be the best when it comes to not just the product that you're making.
Supply
but
chain, production
yeah,
processes.
But also, how do you treat your people?
Exactly.
And I think luxury is absolutely about being human. So about hospitality, you have, for every visitor, you have one member of staff, which is not the case in a kind of more mainstream environment. So,
but interestingly, that hospitality ethos is becoming evident in offices, in the lobbies. I went to PwC, one of the big four, in London the other day to talk to its chairman, Kevin Ellis. And I was greeted by the front desk people, you know, which is really adjacent to the street, in a completely different way to anything I've experienced before, as if there is a sea change in recognizing that values and how people are treated matters. So it's almost like luxury values.
That's a really interesting insight, Julia, because I do see that when I go into the idea of the office or the kind of the place of work is quite like a luxury maison. So it needs to be the kind of the temple where you're expressing all of the values of your company, whether that is to your staff and your whole team, or whether it's to people that might come in and visit you. It needs to be express who you are and the values that you represent. So I think there are really subtle changes, but I also find, I mean, this idea of the two-tier workforce is interesting, because I do see some of the leaders of the brands taking a very interesting approach, because at the same time as you have this conversation about the Nowhere Office, about hybrid working, about two-tier workforces, all the rest of it, you have a very challenging workforce situation, particularly in luxury hospitality. You need lots of staff, you need them to have an extraordinary level of skill, and there are fewer of them. People haven't come back after the pandemic, so the leaders are going, right, how do I think about this differently? The hours in hospitality are usually very, very long and quite punishing, but maybe I could have a much more flexible approach. Maybe I could have a training program that was a level above whatever I've been doing before, so people could come and do 3 days a month or something, a much, much more agile workforce, or do shorter hours, or just come in and it's a logistical challenge, but I can think creatively about how to work with people who are customer facing, but also want a more flexible workplace, but we can still deliver the levels of service.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because products used to feel and be perceived as inanimate. And now there's an understanding that they're made, guess what, by people, in supply chains, operated by people. And that actually adds a luster, doesn't it?
Absolutely the luster. I mean, I think the fact that when you buy a pair of Church's shoes, you know that 250 pairs of hands have been on every single pair of those shoes, and those hands take on average about 7 years to train. So I think that's part of the story. And I think the expectation is that you now, I think post-pandemic has changed within luxury, that you will see that person who has created this beautiful thing, or the pastry chef in the restaurant who's got this absolutely extraordinary level of skill and has just done it just for you.
But inside companies, what I'm picking up from talking to different industry chiefs, inside companies, what I'm picking up is that there is a sort of skill swapping going on. That in, for example, talent acquisition in companies where they're having to retrench and make layoffs, rather than laying off the whole talent company, what they're now doing is redeploying the people in other bits of the business, a bit like work experience, but sort of senior work experience. Now, that's never been done before. There's all sorts of interesting innovations happening. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about you and your team. So how many people work at Walpole? What's your team doing? What's your approach to work?
So we're a team of 12. So it's a small team because we've got 250 brands and about 700 and something people within those brands that we have a relationship with on a daily basis. So we're very people facing. We do operate a hybrid workplace. So we've got a beautiful office just off Sloane Street, a great place to, in the heart of luxury London. And we are open 5 days a week, but if you want to, you can work at home on a Monday and Friday. And then we come together, we're always in the office on, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, because it's that, how do we become very creative? In a small team, you need to be super creative, super hardworking, really on it, really passionate about customers, well, it's our members. So, and we get a lot done when we're together.
Well, so that was my first question. Do you get a lot done when you're together, or do you get people nevertheless sort of not wanting to be in 3 days a week? That was my first question. And my second question is, how productive are they the other days? Because my concern a little bit is that if you over-codify hybrid, you actually make it a rigid, unworkable thing. So how do the 3 days work, and what about the other two?
So my observation across my own organisation, but all the brands that we work with, is that there isn't really a one size fits all, that everybody needs to be more more flexible. And I think, but you also have to set the, it's easier if you set the boundaries because everybody knows where they are. If you have a very people-facing business and a creative, I mean, luxury is an incredibly creative world, as well as being a, you know, one where people and relationships are important, that being together is very energizing. And I think it's that energy that people really like.
So it does work those 3 days.
It does really work. I mean, I don't, you know, and I think, but I think every organization needs to set the template that's going to work best for them and best for their people. There's no rigidity about having to be there at the dot of 9 o'clock and then leave at 5 o'clock, that kind of stuff. It's much more fluid than that.
But what about measuring and, dare I say, monitoring, evaluating, sensing that those other days are being spent productively? And has that been, candidly, has that been an issue for you?
Not at all. I think it's been really, really frictionless. And I think you judge people by their output, don't you? I mean, you know, if you are committed to a cause, I mean, what I have in my team, which is such, you know, just gets me going every single morning with great joy, is people who are so committed to being the kind of cheerleaders for, you know, an incredible sector of the UK economy. And that commitment really translates into working your socks off, wherever you're doing it.
I tell you what really strikes me, Helen, sitting here talking to you in uber swanky Hotel Ned in Manhattan.
British
brand in America. And you yourself are pretty much a walking, talking British brand. But I tell you what really strikes me is that the last episode of the Nowhere Office was with the Trade Union Prospect.
Oh, really?
One of a series of programmes that we're doing with them. And actually, the issues are just no different.
Yeah.
Workers want great conditions. They want to be valued. They want to have flexibility. It's all about, and I find that's actually what's changed, is that the demarcation that we used to have, which would be to sort of say, oh, well, you're luxury, you know, you're at the posho end of the market, you know, you've got nothing to say about the experience of workers. I mean, that's clearly not true.
Yeah, because it's all about the worker, you know.
And the work.
I mean, you've got Mulberry in Somerset, where they make the beautiful handbags, like the beautiful one that you've got there.
Actually, mine isn't a Mulberry. Isn't and the it? Woman it's who very... runs Mulberry in America looked at it and did a double take. It happens to be a different German brand.
Oh, lovely. Very nice.
Listeners, it's a black padded handbag. What can I tell you?
It's very beautiful.
But back to Mulberry, which is a classic British brand.
But I mean, it is the employment in the local area, but you've got a multi-generational workforce. And that's what I find really exciting. So you might have, you've got everybody from the oldest baby boomer to the tiniest, leanest Gen Z in that workforce, often in the same family. And I think if you haven't got a passion for what you're doing, you're not going to produce something really beautiful. So long brands with a very long-term view, like British luxury brands, are committed to making sure that everybody is super, whether you're the warehouse man or the CEO, you're committed to doing something beautiful. You have to have passion and purpose. And I think engaged around a central purpose, you'll produce beautiful things.
And that new sensibility is in fact applying everywhere. It's not a luxury sensibility anymore. And I think that's really what we're hitting on, is that you represent what would have been the elite of the elite, the unaffordable way to do bespoke, led by, you know, passionate crafts people. But actually, in order for work to work, it has to all be treated like a craft. Yes? Am I putting words in your mouth?
I think that's true. I mean, I would say, Julia, that I think the elite are not the customer in luxury. The elite are the workforce. Because they are the team, without question, every single person in that Mulberry factory, or, well, I don't know, making the scenery in the Royal Opera House, or the trench coats up in Yorkshire in Burberry, or on the shop floor at Harrods, they are the team GB of British luxury.
I couldn't agree more. And actually, it's always been the case. It's just that now, because of this Nowhere Office moment, where we're reevaluating and re-looking freshly at really what goes on under the bonnet of any car, let alone a luxury car, is we're seeing these new trends. Look, I know you've got to go and bang the drum for Britain somewhere in Soho doing some luxurious thing. I'm actually off to a Build Expo fair.
You're living your best life.
I'm living my best life. And it's absolutely lovely to see you here in the Nowhere Office.
To see you.
Helen Brocklebank, CEO of Walpole. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me.
So that was Helen Brocklebank of Walpole with Julia Hobsbawm in New York City. And so interesting to hear how these ideas around the NOAA office are really spreading, at least in familiar developed parts of the world, the same questions in different contexts, and for luxury goods companies just as much as white collar and blue collar organizations. It's the same discussion in different contexts. Well, some more clips now and sound treats from New York. Julia's having far too much of a good time, I think. I'm here on my own, like that song in Les Mis, on my own. But Julia, back to you in New York.
I've just come out having interviewed Helen Brocklebank of Walpole, and I'm heading over to the Javits Center across on the west, lower west side, to hear about the construction aspect of this great city. I'm inside the conference center now. I'm with Chen from Hinoki, Wood of Magic Power. It's basically materials that are antibacterial. Is that right,
yeah,
Chen?
Yeah. Material and the product.
And so it's all designed to be beautiful but to build with safely post-COVID?
Yeah, but as usual, we build a temple, Japanese temple by Hinoki.
Oh, I see.
For 1,000 years.
So for 1,000 years you've been building Japanese temples,
yeah,
and now we're beginning to build in offices?
Yes, and in the Japanese type, Japan Zen. The space all made by Hinoki.
So it's not just for safety, Hinoki is for beauty and grace.
Yeah, yeah.
How long have you been building commercially, having built Japanese temples for 1,000 years?
Temple, maybe my company is my father and grandfather, not only by myself. Yeah.
And how long building offices and materials?
Maybe in now the modern building, maybe 10 years ago.
So, in Japanese historical terms,
yeah,
very
yeah,
recent,
yeah,
very
as
new.
As usual, that may be the temple, only for temple.
And are you busy? You have a lot of business?
Yes, yes, in Taiwan. But only not only in Japan and Taiwan. I'm Taiwanese.
You're from Taiwan?
Yeah, but I buy the wood from Japan. And I have company in Japan and Taiwan. But really, we have the factory in Taiwan.
Okay.
Yes.
So, this podcast is the Nowhere Office. It's about the new changing world,
yeah,
where
yeah, yeah,
people's offices are changing,
yeah,
and they don't necessarily work from
yeah,
offices
and
all the time.
And,
is that right?
Yeah,
is that the change?
Is right, yes. And it can bring us the healthy. The Hinoki can make the oil. Can make oil. Oil can be very relaxed.
Oil?
Yeah.
Hinoki essential oil?
Yeah.
Okay. So Hinoki... Excuse my ignorance, is Hinoki the wood or Hinoki is the oil?
Hinoki is
oil treated wood.
Yeah, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Chen, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
So now I'm with AJ Godin.
Yeah.
So you're AJ,
yeah,
and I'm with Eric, and you're from Milwaukee Tools.
Yes. Correct.
Okay, so what's that about?
So we're the number one professional power tool in the United States, right? So when people think of Milwaukee Tool, for those listeners that do know what Milwaukee is,
yes,
right? A lot of people think of us as just the drill or the Sawzall, which we invented about 70 years ago, but we're a lot more than that today. We're a full solutions provider. We not only have power tools, we have accessories, hand tools, safety, heated gear, and now we're PPE, and now we're expanding into the light equipment space when it comes to battery power tools.
So you're busy bunnies, AJ.
Busy bunnies. We're all around the New York City, like our whole team is the job site solutions team, so we're on job sites constantly, you know, engaging with contractors, subcontractors throughout the city, you know, engaging the new projects like when the Javits Center is being built, you have the spiral right across the street, so all the new construction going on in New York City is what we're a part of.
And you're dealing with, I presume, sort of facilities managers, property, real estate, portfolio people, project managers.
Whatever it might be.
Hello, Freelix.
Yes.
You're here too.
Oh, I'm being interviewed.
Yeah. You're being interviewed too. So what are your different roles? Freelix, what do you do for Milwaukee Tool?
So we all have different verticals that we look after.
Verticals for our listeners means sort of sections and areas of responsibility, just to convert
yes,
into English. Go
correct.
On, what's your vertical, Freelix?
So just for reference, AJ here covers electrical for us, so a lot of the electrical trades. So as a company, we focus on trade-focused solutions for specific trades. So I cover HVAC and sheet metal.
HVAC and sheet metal?
Yes.
goodness, that specialist.
That's air conditioning.
Oh, well, that's the big one.
It's more, it's the big one. It's more of a smaller in this market, though. The electrical trade dominates in this market, but you do have some bigger ones upcoming. Eric over here covering municipalities.
And so I cover municipalities. So
okay, what's that mean?
So municipality is anything that's funded by the government. So what I focus on in New York City is mostly the transit, emergency services. So you have the MTA, which is the subways, buses, Long Island Railroad and Metro North. Then we also have FDNY, NYPD that I cover. We also have the DEP, which is Environmental Protection, which is a lot of the water treatment plants.
Infrastructure is the backbone of New York City. They're going to keep investing.
And the way that I look at it, like I mentioned before, we're the full solution provider. You just walk around your day-to-day life. Everything that you touch essentially needs a tool to be put it together, and you need a tool to continue to fix it. So that's how we continue to make our profits, right? We get people in our system, and we continue to go.
On that marvelously optimistic note, I better go and hear some spieling from the conference people who probably don't work anything like as hard as you. Nice to talk to you. Thank you. Marcus, hello. New York City Department of Buildings. You're looking very chirpy. What do you do?
Oh, I work in the marketing team and communications. So what we have here is we're answering any questions as far as your work progress and everything like that. We're helping with building codes. And we have a little activation booth, so you can help build the city one screw at a time.
What do you mean you've got an activation booth?
Yeah.
There's a, like a TARDIS for fans of Doctor Who. There's a sort of green door.
A screw and put it in the city skyline.
Oh, I see. That is really funny.
So it's pretty much building the city skyline from the ground up.
I think my grandson, who is just getting into building, would just completely love that. But. Building regulations in a city like New York are actually no joke. Do you really make it frictionless and easy, like putting in a power tool?
Absolutely. Come to us first, so we'll be able to help you and guide you through your process so you don't run into any problems later.
What if I said to you that I don't know if anyone else thinks, but I think that offices of the future are going to have to accommodate residential units or sleepover units for out-of-towners because the traffic flow of commuters and workers is changing so much. Is that insane, or is that not your department, or both?
I wouldn't use the term insane, but that's definitely not our department.
And you're looking like you're happy it isn't too.
Yes, absolutely. we don't get involved into things like that. So.
Okay, so you're not part of the regulation side.
As far as buildings.
Yes.
So yeah.
And hello, Mr. Badge, Ryan.
Ryan Deegan. Yes,
hello, Ryan.
For office conversions to residential, that is something that is legally possible, but it depends on if the developer or owner is interested. Then they can reach out to us, and we can, if you need a project to be approved or reviewed, that's what we're here for. We can check and see based on zoning if it's possible. And
have you had any requests that you're aware of?
Boy, I imagine we have.
Okay. And I just want to say hello to Lisa. Hello, Lisa. Very, very immaculate-looking woman. And what's your role here? It would be invidious to exclude you from the Nowhere Office podcast. You're the Q&A person.
Yes, I'm with customer service at the Department of Buildings.
I would imagine that customers of the Department of Buildings are sort of a bit stressed and a bit in a hurry, are they?
Some are. I mean, you know, everybody wants to get their project, you know, completed. So it depends on what they come. So my team, we answer questions from professionals, homeowners, tenants. So we run the gamut, but we're there to assist them.
Well, thank you so much for spontaneously being on the Nowhere Office podcast. Well, New Yorkers were unsurprisingly very spontaneous and gracious in their spontaneity about responding to me just saying, would you like to talk to the Nowhere Office? And they all said yes immediately. And I hope you got some insight. I certainly did from the Build Expo, which really presents, I think, a picture of stoic resilience in the face of tremendous change and upheaval. The business of building workplaces and reconstructing work patterns is continuing. And of course, we heard that from fellow Brit Helen Brocklebank at the beginning. So Stefan is in London. He can't join me for the sign-offs for this week, but we'll be recording our next programme together. And in the meantime, look forward to having your company again here on the Nowhere Office, a fully connected production, music by New Yorker Julien Brejean. And I'm Julia Hobsbawm. in New York with Stefan Stern in London. Thanks for listening.